I'd like to call the Transportation Finance Division to order, please. Today we have a review from MnDOT on what they call Chapter 152, which basically was the transportation bill that was passed in the last session. And the clerk will note the roll. I don't believe we have a quorum quite yet, but we'll call the quorum when we get it. 2, 4. We got a quorum?
We need 10.
10? We got 10. Count me.
20 members.
We got them here already? We got a quorum? Are the MnDOT people? Yeah, do you want to come up, Mr. Gray? Mr. Gray, we intend to start on time and quit early, if that helps you.
Mr. Chair, if you know me, the start on time part is a bit of a challenge usually, but definitely ending on time is the real challenge, so you've thrown on the gauntlet here. We'll work on that.
Mr. Gray, if you don't mind, when we get a quorum, I'll just temporarily.
Okay. Mr. Chair, this is going to be a two-part presentation. I'm going to cover the initial general budget overview for MnDOT as well as the Chapter 152, and then Ms. McKenzie is going to come up and talk about our Chapter 152 program.
Okay, thank you. We do have a quorum, so I'll call the meeting to order, and the clerk will announce the roll, and we have minutes in your packet. I presume someone has checked them, or someone moved the minutes?
I'll move the minutes.
Nothing, pardon? What? Yeah. Okay, the minutes have been moved. Any questions or comments? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. The minutes are approved.
Mr. Chairman?
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Magnus.
Thank you. Just to point out for some of the new folks, Chapter 152 was last year's transportation bill that was passed here. Some of the new members don't know that.
I did not. Before you walked in, I did mention that. You have to be here. You have to be here in time. Now, like I say, we're going to start early, quit early. Mr. Gray,
Mr. Chair, and members, thank you for the opportunity to talk about our agency budget and specifically spend some time on Chapter 152, which, in case anybody's aware, was the transportation bill passed this past session. Thank you for that segue, Representative Magnus. I'm going to try and, all kidding aside, get through this pretty quickly, because I think a lot of this is information that's familiar certainly to people who have been on the committee in the past, but by and large, people who follow and who are on the Transportation Committee are probably aware of none of these things. But wanted to give you some background. First, we'll talk about our base operating budget. And the key word in that phrase is base. We're not here to talk about any agency proposals yet. Those haven't been concluded upon and won't be announced until the governor presents his budget to the legislature. So this is recurring spending that would go forward.
Mr. Gray, may I interrupt just a minute? We have instructions for the audience and for the members, and I have to read this, and it's specific because it interferes with the recording. The House requests that all wireless communication devices be turned off during hearings. The devices interfere with the audio in the room and the official audio recording in the meeting. And that doesn't just mean to turn them to, it means turn them off all the way. So we have to read that every meeting, so you'll hear that again. But again, for the people in the audience, turn off all electric devices or cell phones. Excuse me for interrupting, Ken, but I think that should do it.
Great. That's fine, Mr. Chair. And this is on the overhead so the audience can follow, and I believe everybody has a hard copy. Let me get a brief background about our revenue sources. Talk real quickly about the recent forecast, its impact on MnDOT and our trunk highway fund balance. There's been some reference in the capital investment committees and other discussions around financial management policies and practices. We'll talk briefly about that, and then provide a brief overview of Chapter 152. Real quickly, MnDOT is organized for budget purposes into four broad programs. A multimodal program, which we highlight our aviation, transit, and freight functions. State roads, which is grouped into three subcategories. Infrastructure investment and planning, which most of us think of two things, our state road construction projects, the program delivery planning and delivery of those projects. And a third category is debt service. Virtually all of our debt service is supporting projects, so it's part of this program. Infrastructure operations and maintenance is more straightforward. That's the snow and ice, the pavement patching and striping, and the operations of the system, our traffic folks, as well as electronic communications, where we provide leadership service for not only MnDOT communications, but for supporting the state patrol, as well as the armor installation. We're on point for leading that effort. Local roads, CASA is the county system, and MSAS is the
municipal. If I may, again, I'm sorry to interrupt, but for our new members, we've had a request. When you have the acronyms, would you just identify them? Because I see there are quite a few in this thing.
Mr. Chair, where I know the acronyms, I will do that. That's one of the disadvantages of not growing up with MnDOT, but I can't use that excuse anymore. I just had my 10-year anniversary early this summer, so local roads is the county state aid highway system, and the SAS is the municipal state aid system. So those are cities over 5,000 population, I believe, that receive direct pass-throughs of highway user fund monies. And we'll talk a little bit more about local roads in a couple slides down the road. General support is the smallest program in the budget, but reflects our administrative functions, building investments, and things of that nature, so we do not include that in state roads. To give you some sense of the magnitude of the dollars that we're talking about, and again, these are the direct appropriations, base ongoing appropriations that exist in the system today. Multimodal is primarily funded by general fund or appropriations to the state airports fund. State roads is virtually entirely trunk highway fund, at least at the direct appropriation level line. Local roads, the county systems and municipal system funds, that's the amount of funding that is passed through to our local partners, local government aid. And general support is 100% trunk highway fund appropriations. And over the biennium, and I should have been clear about this, this is a biennial total, so it's a two-year total. The general support functions, including buildings, is approximately $125 million. So our total direct appropriations for the biennium is $3.8 billion, which is a significant total. Over and above that, I would reference that there are statutory appropriations, and the biggest contributor to statutory appropriations are federal funds. There are significant flows of federal funds that go to our transit functions, both Greater Minnesota Transit, but more significantly even North Star Corridor, as a, for instance, in this case. The funding runs through our book, if you will, and goes down to that project. There are significant airport federal funds that are part of this number. So these are over and above and are part of our statutory appropriations, and they're there, and they represent ceilings and generally grants or pass-through monies. So officially, our total base operating budget is $4.7 billion, and that's what we will build on for the upcoming biennial budget request, and this would be what we start from. By background, and again, I don't want to oversimplify anything, but I want to cover everything that I think is particularly relevant to this committee. The Highway User Trust Distribution Fund. Did I get that right? Okay. The highway, more commonly referred to as the Highway User Fund, all of our state revenues flow into a Highway User Fund. From that fund, they're aggregated, and then they are split out to state highway, county systems, municipal systems. So some of the dollars you saw flowing through there, I believe it was over $1 billion, is going to the counties and cities. The three primary resources for or revenue sources for the Highway User Fund, state revenue sources, are of course the gas tax, which is the most significant at this point in time, cab fees or motor vehicle registration fees, as they're referred to oftentimes, or motor vehicle sales tax. And you see the dollar amounts and magnitude. So over 50% of our funds are from the gas tax currently. Those are all collected and are put into this holding fund, the Highway User Trust Fund, for distribution to trunk highway, county state aid, and municipal state aid. And you see those percentages, 62%, 29, 9. That's an oft-referred-to formula. So when you hear 62, 29, 9, You know they're talking about how money is coming in and how it's going out to the state, county, and municipal systems. There's a small note in your presentation saying that this excludes the 5% flex fund. It's hard to show on a chart, but essentially, money that flows into the highway user fund, 5% is set aside at the top for a flexible fund, and the legislature prescribes where those monies go. With the passage of Chapter 152, or the new transportation funding bill, there's a couple of different buckets. You look at the old and the new money relative to that. And in fact, I would add that we look at the old and the new money for all of our revenue sources going forward. But it's really 62% of 95%, if that makes sense. And 29% of 95%, and 9% of 95% of all the monies in the highway user fund. Again, to reinforce the sense of magnitude, out of in 2009, our forecast based on November 2008 is that we're going to take in approximately just under $1.4 billion of revenues in fiscal 2009. Of that amount, the 62% share minus the flex fund, $825 million would go to the trunk highway fund for purposes intended. So that would be state revenues going to the trunk highway fund. And the amount would be smaller for each of the county and the municipality. Looking ahead, I think the key point to this slide is to show that we are forecasting continued growth in the state revenue sources to the highway user fund. I would say that with the forecast, and we'll talk a little bit more about the impacts of the economy and some of the trends that we've seen, while we're not as impacted as the general fund is, we are not immune from some of these pressures, as you might imagine, particularly with respect to motor vehicle sales tax and registration fees. That said, that growth reflects two major events. One, obviously, is the transportation bill and the ratcheting in of not only a gas tax growing from 20 cents to ultimately 28.5 cents over, I think, a couple-year period. I believe 5.5 cents is in place already. But also the increasing, the revised depreciation schedule for tab fees, which effectively is going to raise more money through tab fees in the future. And lastly, on the MBES front, the motor vehicle sales front, not to be forgotten is the 2007 constitutional amendment that is phasing in additional MBES monies 20% per year, roughly, from the existing base. So this is good growth. It's positive growth. It's less more than we thought when either the constitutional amendment or the bill was passed because of the recent forecast that revised some of our projections going forward. Moving to that point, the November forecast and as a quick overview, the assumptions that we made relative to future revenues show that gas tax is down 2%, and I would say that this is based on a summer start where gas prices were, seems like ancient history, but 6 months ago gas prices were at $4 a gallon. I would say somewhere between $3.25, $3.50, we saw marked differences in the amount of gallons being consumed. And of course, gas tax is a cent per gallon charge, and it roughly correlates to vehicle miles traveled. We've heard a lot about that from the federal folks about how vehicle miles traveled have been declining since, in a market fashion, since April. We experienced that in June, July, August, and into part of September, where there was less consumption. And you can assume that people traveled less, took different forms of transportation, and again, it was clearly when gas started edging up about $3.25, we saw differences in driving or consumption patterns. Tab fees, we think there's a little bit of a false start there. The biggest revenue source to the tab fees are the newest cars. And as newer cars aren't being purchased as aggressively, the fleet and the kind of a mix of the registration fees isn't as rich from a revenue standpoint as we thought. We hope that shift will be write it over time, but we did take some reductions in the early years at 3% and then modified it down later. And MVEST, which is a figure that we rely for the Department of Revenue and Department of Finance for, it's much more marked in terms of the decline in the forecast, and I think that's not a surprise for those of us who have been watching the automobile industry and the struggles they're having. That said, the 13% reference after MVEST is to just remind us that that's the smallest piece of our state revenue funding sources. There are a couple of other small pieces of state revenues that I'll talk about later, but these are the big three, if you will, and kind of their proportional impact and the adjustments we made with the recent November revenue forecast. One of the things that I did want to highlight is that with the effect of this and also our treatment and usage of federal aid agreements, we are projecting and I will use the term modest, not insignificant, but modest fund balance for issue for both 09 and 11. I think that the major driver behind this is that if you looked at the impact of our state funding loss, it's approximately $30 million a year for the three-year period, and $90 million was a lot for us to absorb. That said, one of the things that the revenue forecast does well is look at revenues. We have long used the federal aid agreements and accelerated borrowings or federal, what they call advanced construction financing. It's a complex environment. The forecast, we're trying to be less reliant on borrowing ahead from the Fed and be more prudent while taking advantage of a great tool. So we have managed our program such that we need less federal aid agreements and can deliver the same amount of projects. That's the good news. The bad news is that for the forecast, we had to take over $40 million out of our revenue line, but because the forecast protocol insists that appropriations stay the same level, there's $40 million of artificial spending still shown in the forecast. So the quick point for the committee is that over $40 million of that $49 million, if you will, is a bookkeeping entry, and we've grossed down our revenues and not done the same for our spending. So we'll cover more of that as we go through the budget process. So I will say that as we look at managing this, that we're going to be very close to a zero fund balance for the upcoming 3 years.
Mr. Gray, when you talk about borrowing, are you borrowing from within the state, within the departments, from another source and temporary, or are you going outside and borrow? Is that what you mean?
Mr. Chair, my reference to borrowing, we do both. We do both in the sense that we have trunk highway bonds, but with federal aid agreements, we actually take advantage of the ability to bring federal revenues forward and pay it back in future years with lesser revenue streams. And so it's a form of borrowing, if you will.
And the point, I don't mean about the bonds, but I mean like if your cash flow is short, you just get it from another department out of the total state budget rather than going outside and borrowing from a bank and paying interest. That's right?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. We use advanced construction financing. Actually, we don't even rely on other agencies with maybe some minor exceptions. We've been very focused on maintaining a healthy cash reserve for MnDOT because of the nature and size of our projects, and that's one of our key financial practices. That's a good segue to the next slide. We are working on and have received direction and encouragement both from the legislature and the legislative auditor to refine and enter into a dialogue with the Department of Finance, MNB, and the legislature about our policies. I just attended a capital investment hearing where there was quite a bit of scrutiny on the general fund debt policies. We too have some unique characteristics. I mentioned trunk highway bonds. We do have some standing policies that we've been using as guidelines for the amount of trunk highway debt service. We're revisiting those and making sure it's a prudent level. And the key thing though is that we also need to link that with the prudent management of our fund balance, our cash reserves, and use of federal funds. So we're working on those, and we'll be talking more, and likely at some point in time during the session have a chance to talk more with this committee about that. One other thing that I wanted to note, and I do reference the fact that we're working with the Department of Finance, trunk highway bonds are often referred to just as that, and then the bonds that are part of our normal capital cycle are oftentimes referred to as GO bonds. Well, a point, maybe a technical point, but one that has served some discussion, is that trunk highway bonds are also general obligation bonds. But the state has overarching general obligation bond management, the debt service practices, as well as some that are specific to the general fund. For instance, the 3% that we hear so much about is specific to the general fund general obligation bond, and that's your typical every other year capital bonding program. Trunk highway bonds, while they are GO bonds, have a little bit different, sometimes they're in and out of that policy, but the trunk highway fund is solely responsible for the repayment of those bonds, and there's a little debt, the debt service treatment is a little bit different. But I just didn't want you to get hung up on hearing GO bonds and trunk highway bonds, and then why is Department of Finance concerned about trunk highway bonds, but technically they are GO bonds, the kind of sisters to the GO bonds. If there are any questions, Mr. Chair, I'll jump into Chapter 152.
No, the only question I'd just like to comment, why don't you, the acronym MMD, that changed from Department of Revenue, whatever it was, but right. Would you just identify that one?
Mr. Chair, I should have thought that, yes, we do that. The MMD is Minnesota Management and Budget. That's the form of Department of Finance and includes also the Department of Employee Relations in the MMB tag.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members, at this point I just wanted to give a quick overview of Chapter 152. And as I thought about how to present this, I thought the scale of magnitude versus the scale of preciseness would be the goal. I'm using numbers that we prepared shortly after and during the passage of the bill. They, by and large, tie to the legislative staff numbers, but there may be a number or two here where there's, on a scale of magnitude, a small difference or something. And I haven't updated them for this most recent forecast. And there's a number of reasons for that, basically because it's hard to segregate which piece of the total funds is the new piece and which isn't, and which is one of the challenges as we flow money through to our county and municipal systems. We're working hard to identify that. But to give you a sense of kind of the scale of the funding bill, our estimate that we used early for state and local road and bridge monies was out of a $6.5 billion bill, which I think was pretty much commonly talked about. You'll hear somebody say 6.2, somebody say 6.7. It's in that range. 4.4, or a vast majority of it, was towards state and local roads and bridges. There was a significant Metro and Greater Minnesota Transit funding component, and I'm not as familiar with that, other than to say that the portion in there for Greater Minnesota Transit is significant to their relatively modest operations. But most of this $1.2 billion, as you'll see later, ties to the quarter or one-half cent sales tax options to the counties. Trunk Highway GO bonding, and there's that fill-in for the GO as a reminder, $1.8 billion. Of that amount, I think approximately $80 million, was for MnDOT buildings. The entire balance was for the roads and bridges and roads and other projects identified in the bill. It was a chance to tap into some new and unique revenue sources as well as build on existing sources. And a key consideration was a motor fuel tax credit. I believe it's $25 per year was a key component of the bill. A quick overview. I mentioned the $1.8 billion in trunk highway bonds. The bill supported gas tax increases phased in over a period of time of up to 8.5%, 8.5 cents. A rather unique feature was highlighting that 3.5 cents of this is a kind of a blink on tax, I guess you could call it. When debt service is at a certain level, up to 3.5 cents of the money is intended to directly correlate to our debt service, but our debt costs that we're incurring. I mentioned higher registration fees, or tab fees as they're most commonly called, and that's basically based on revising our depreciation cycle and accelerating that a bit so that there's a higher cost up front. Phase in of a leased vehicle sales tax, and that was prescribed in the legislation that 50% of that is to go to Greater Minnesota Transit and 50% to metro counties. And then there was another source where we raised our motor vehicle rental fees from, I believe, 3% to 5%. Getting into some of the more prescriptive language, and I hope this gives a good overview for the committee, but for the 7-county metro area, 0.25% sales tax and up to $20, I think it's up to maybe a flat 20, motor vehicle excise tax was written into the legislation. A key point there was no referendum was required. I think it's up to the individual county boards to approve this participation, and then there's a joint powers agreement that has been put into place for those 7 counties. The bill also.
Excuse me, Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Leader. Mr. Gray, the motor vehicle, the sales tax, that didn't require joint powers agreement. But couldn't the counties do that independently and keep that for themselves? Did I understand that correctly?
Mr. Chair, I'd have to clarify that because I get a little bit confused, to be candid with you, between wheelage taxes and motor vehicle excise taxes, which the county has the ability to do, and it's a domain that is not really directed by MnDOT. So I would clarify that for you and get something in writing back to the committee.
Thank you.
Mr. Gray, Mr. Burris can clarify that.
Mr. Chair and members, the 0.25% metro area sales tax required the creation or joining the Joint Powers Board. There's a separate sales tax that was authorized at a 0.5% for individual counties in Greater Minnesota, for also for transportation purposes. That one did not require, but allowed for creation of a Joint Powers Board.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Beard.
So Mr. Bertha, what about the $20 motor vehicle sales tax on the title transfer? Could the counties, individual counties around the state, employ that without having to be part of the joint powers agreement? I'm thinking about metro counties in particular, because I think mine did, but I just want to be sure. Scott County.
Mr. Chair, members, we might be thinking actually of the wheelage tax, which is separate from the new authority for the sales tax that went into law last year.
So this one, Mr. Chair, if I may, so the $20 motor vehicle excise tax, that was tied to the, in the metro area, that was tied to the transit sales tax then, if they could offer?
Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, the excise tax referenced here is one piece of the sales tax. That excise tax is placed on motor vehicles, and it's in lieu of the percentage-based sales tax.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
You may proceed.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Burris referenced in the 80-county, non-natural counties, if you will, there's authorization for up to a 0.5-cent sales tax. I believe this required a referendum, and I'll stay away from the $20 motor vehicle excise tax for now, but it's out there, and let's get some clarification.
Mr. Gray, if I may just ask Mr. Burris, I believe that $20 motor vehicle sales tax, in effect, there are only a couple counties that use it, and they're not participants in the 0.25% sales tax. Isn't that correct?
Right. Mr. Chair, you mean the wheelage tax?
Yeah.
I believe there's some overlap. I need to double check on that.
Representative Over.
Mr. Chair, we have everything in Dakota County. We have wheelage, sales tax, and excise tax. Mm-hmm. We get all three of them.
Representative Holberg, was that one of the parts, was that in effect before the bill was passed? Is that all since the bill was passed?
I think the wheelage was before that.
That's what I was kind of wondering. Right. Representative Magnus.
Mr. Chairman, it's my understanding when you do a local option sales tax, basically which the metro transit tax is, then you do it as part of this, and I'm not on the tax committee anymore, but as part of it, that's where the $20 vehicle comes from, and that's part of
part of what you do when you do that, when you do a local option tax.
I was referring to the wheelings tax.
But the wheelings tax is from each county to decide, and that's statewide. My understanding.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Morrow.
Mr. Chair, my understanding is actually only seven counties still have a wheelings tax. I was referred to Mr. Burris, but I know my county cannot.
Yeah, that's right. In existing law. You want to clarify that? So we clarify.
Mr. Chair, members, Representative Morrow is correct. It's not all counties throughout the state currently. It's just the metro county.
I believe you were aware of that, Representative Magnus, too, right? You may proceed.
Mr. Chair, I apologize for not being a little bit more up on this, but I think that the wheelage tax is different as we've talked about, so I think we've kind of got this figured out. But I did want to reemphasize that at least for the half-cent non-natural sales tax, I believe that did require a referendum from the county. The established the Trunk-Highway Bridge Improvement Program, that was a core fundamental funding directive and goal of the legislation. It amended the county state aid formula, and this is particularly important because this means that we're trying to track existing or then existing revenues to the Trunk Highway Fund, or to rather the Highway User Fund, as well as now what are the new monies being generated by increased cab fees and gas taxes. And then it also created a task force on transportation, which I'm not sure if that group has been to this committee yet, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Gray, I'm not aware that that's been appointed. Is that appointed?
Mr. Chair, it's been appointed. They met, and I think that they've raced to a rapid conclusion with some, at least two or three meetings that I'm aware of in the early winter months, and I think they either have or are close to releasing some feedback, but I'm not close to the project. MnDOT impacts, and this is where I'm going to take a little bit license with the numbers, and I really mean I'm talking 2 or 3% if we're off one way or the other. There's moving parts and different ways to look at it, but MnDOT as an agency over the next 10 years, and these are all unofficial forecasts, and quite frankly, we relied on legislative staff and worksheets to build on this, but over the 10 years, the bill was estimated to generate $2.6 billion and authorized, as we stated, $1.8 billion in trunk highway bonds. These revenues support a critical piece, at least to MnDOT, of the bill that was an operating budget increase of $75 million a year. And then, of course, there's going to be a ramp up, but we're going to be growing into our debt service considerations going forward. And again, of the $1.8 billion in bonds, all but less than $100 million was appropriated for investments in state roads. To give you a little sense of the scale of where the revenues were coming from in this bill, and again, this is not focused on the transit part, but rather on the road and bridge side, if you will, or the highway side. Motor vehicle tax increases are, again, not surprising, the biggest chunk of change.
Excuse me. Representative Holberg?
Thank you. Mr. Chair, can we just back up for a second to the previous screen? And you said you're using rough numbers, and I'm going to use rough numbers, and tell me if I'm wrong or not. But if you take the $2.6 billion over 10 years, that's roughly $260 million a year, and if your operating increases, you're looking at $75 million a year, are you consuming 30% of the new money in operational costs?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, yes, that would be of the new money, that would be correct. I think the debt service is anticipated to somewhere at $900 billion in that range. You take 750 out of the 260, that's correct.
Mr. Chair, if I might, I think that seems kind of high. If the purpose of all this new money was to build new roads and bridges, that just seems like a really huge increase. in operating costs. And I later on I see we have already increased FTEs by over 200. I'm just concerned that we're going back to the old days with a lot of costs in the office and not putting money into tar and cement.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. DeGray.
Okay. Any further questions on that? Because I think the assessment is roughly correct. I mean, it's going to be, you know, much less than $260 million a year early and much more than $260 million a year later. But, you know, over the 10 years, it's clear to $260, that's correct.
Well, and Mr. Chair, that doesn't make me feel any better because it's much less than $260 early and you're already going up $75 million. In the first year, and we know that's going to grow if that's FTEs and operational costs. I mean, it could be far higher than 30% of that figure being consumed by operational costs. That's just a point, Mr. Chair.
Any further comment? If not, you may
proceed. Mr. Chair, other than to say that a significant part of the bill. And I recognize that $75 million is a lot. That said, there was a high level of pent-up demand for services and to sustain service levels and increase service levels and address rising costs, particularly for materials, and to get more resources that are available to boots on the road, so to speak. In addition, a not insignificant piece of the operating budget increase, as you'll see later, is dedicated to delivering these bonds and a bigger program going forward for MnDOT. So our state road construction program and certainly the $1.7 billion of projects require a significant investment in program delivery, planning, design, contract administration and management and the like. So these funds are also for that. Mr. Chair, members, again, just to give a sense of the kind of magnitude of the proportionality of the revenue streams, you can see that motor fuel tax increases account for the most money. And again, this is on a speculative 10-year forecast. But that said, a number that's increasing significantly and makes a big contribution and gets maybe sometimes lost in the shuffle, if you will, talking about gas tax. There's $1.8 billion is generated from motor vehicle registration fees. More unique...
May I just interrupt? Representative Depke had a question.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Sorry, I didn't get my hand up there soon enough. Where is the money that is charged for the 394 fast lane corridor that gets people from, you know, the... From my district, which is right near Minnetonka, up until St. Paul. And there's a charge, you pay a monthly charge for, it's called the fast lane fee, and then it's charged based on the amount of traffic on the road. And where does that go? Where does that money go?
Mr. Chair, Representative, that money goes to the Trunk Highway Fund. And it is intended to first cover the operational cost of the system, and then I believe as revenues, and we're approaching that point, I think, pretty quickly, as revenues grow, it would any amount over the operating cost of the system would go to 50% to Metropolitan Transit, and the balance would stay with the Trunk Highway Fund for future investments in the lane.
And that's already in your calculator. I apologize. Thank you, Mr. Chair. does that mean then that money is already in the figures that you gave us?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes.
Thank you.
Rental car fee increase, you talked about that increase being from 3 to 5%. And then the sales tax on motor vehicle leases is $113 million. Now, that may seem like a modest number, but I believe this is the bucket that, when I referenced that there was a motor vehicle tax or motor fuel tax credit of $25 per individual, that money comes first out of this bucket, I believe. So this is the net That's after paying off the credit to anybody who is eligible for that $25 fuel tax credit.
Mr. Gray, that starts in 2010 or 2011, I believe, doesn't it?
Mr. Chair, we're working on that, but it's not in there right now. It's a little bit, we need some interpretation, in that, but no later than 2011. And, you know, as a side note, if you saw motor vehicle sales tax, not only on cars that are being purchased, but on cars that are being leased, has been the hardest hit. Go back to our 62299 formula, the distribution formula from the Highway User Fund, we can see that out of the approximately $4.4 billion, $2.5 was the Chunk Highway Fund, along with the appropriations that we discussed with Representative Holberg on for operating and debt service costs and investments. But the county and municipal state aid funds, this is a significant source of money, and this, again, is only the Chapter 152 revenues. It's not the existing base revenues, so this is, if you will, over and above what has been the historic case. And the Transit Assistance Fund, which is significant to MnDOT as the lead agent for Greater Minnesota Transit Operators in terms of accumulating agreements and passing through the monies, is an additional $57 million anticipated over the life of the fund, or the 10 years, rather. Some of the key points regarding bond usage. This is the 1.8. There's a mandated bridge program, and I'm going to leave the construction program, the bridge program, comments to Ms. McKenzie, who will be following me, and she'll talk you through the construction program proper. But just to give you a kind of a, if a figure's guy, give you the numbers, if you will, we anticipate that two-thirds of the bonds will be used for bridges, and there were $600 million specifically designated in the bill as bridge bonds, and then the balance for, I guess what we call non-directed bonds. We'll be using about the same amount of non-directed bonds to help deliver the bridge program that was identified in the bill. There's a portion of these funds, up to 17%, available for program delivery. We're working hard to keep that number lower than 17%. And just as a side note, $1.2 billion for all the bridges that are planned, the projects, will need to be complemented or supplemented by MnDOT's regular program and future federal funds. So the cost of the investment, if you will, is going to be much higher than just the bonds. I mentioned that there are $83 million of bonds supporting MnDOT buildings, including a new district headquarters in Mankato, which I think they've been coming to the legislature for 10 or 12 years, and we had, prior to my start with MnDOT, with concerns about that building, so we're very, very fortunate that way. And then one of the more visible projects, of course, is the facade of the building across the street, the MnDOT CO, if you will, corporate quarters that require refacing. In addition, that leaves the balance of just over $500 million of bonds for various programs, including interchange program, $50 million towards transit facility and investments, and a legislative priority on District 7 for the projects down there, the estimate $100 million. And then we're also doing some accelerating some safety preservation projects as part of the money.
We have a couple of acronyms in there again. Would you
okay.
Identify them?
Let's see, which acronyms are we looking at?
TBD and ROW, they may not.
Okay, TBD is my way of saying to be determined. So it's not a highway acronym, but we haven't identified the projects associated with that fund. The ROW is right of way, and that is a good reminder because that's significant on two fronts, not only the cost, but there's also a lead time. So some of the projects require right of way, and that's always a factor as we plan out when and how we deliver the projects.
Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Gray, have the bonds been let? Have any of the bonds been let?
Mr. Gray.
Mr. Chair, Representative Magnus, only a modest portion. I'm going to say $20 or $25 million. We've been able to cash flow our planning and programming efforts to date. We have three projects that have been let and are underway, and we've been able to absorb that cash flow. Another issue, quite frankly, is that the Department of Finance, when we were planning to sell some bonds earlier, did have to slow off because of the credit market situation, slow down their issuance. So we're moving a little bit slower on the sale of bonds. So we did have a very successful outcome, and last week they were able to get to the market, and the trunk highway bonds were a portion of that, and I think that they got under 3.5%, I mean left some basis points under 3.5%, which to me was rewarding to hear, because I've always, and this is my own intuitive reaction, always felt that there will be a flight to quality. So if there's a silver lining in this credit mess, is that states like Minnesota that have been good credit risks in the past are going to rise to the top in these bond markets. No guarantees, and that's just my humble opinion, but it was rewarding to see the state get that sort of number one, ability to sell bonds at all. It was a combination general obligation and trunk highway bond sale. And number two, to see it valued and the credit risk be rewarded at 3.5% or less.
Representative
Hornstein,
do you have another follow-up?
Well, just to follow up, Mr. Chairman, because I had heard we had a variable sale, and I didn't know how much was sold, and I guess the key point that I would like to work out in my mind is that do we anticipate, what is our anticipation for the bonds? Are we going to be able to sell them? What rate are we going to be at? And then going back to the bill, Mr. Chairman, I believe the 3.5 cents is to service the bond debt, and what effect is that going to have on that? If in fact we are looking optimistically on the bond sales and can get them out and at a lower rate, what is that going to have an effect on the debt cost that were built into the bill? In other words, are they going to be less than the 3.5 cents, Mr. Chairman? And is this something that's been thinking about in my mind as when this whole financial turmoil turned south on us and didn't know if we could get the bonds even sold.
Just in the previous committee, for some of the members that are on the bond committee, they went all through that. But Mr. Gray, if you want to comment on that?
Sure, Mr. Chair. Representative Magnus raised some good points. And again, I would put my kind of caution on the front end of this. We're looking out at a 10-year window. We only had, when we actually pulled some of this information together, a three-year window, if you will, of official forecast. But the short answer is the lower the rate, the better the debt service cost. There's no doubt about that. This is excellent news. I don't know for a fact what rate has been used in the out years, but I would wager that it was not as low as 3.5%. But we rely on the Department of Finance, or MMB, for some of those calculations. And if there's other variables, how fast are the projects ready to go, when do you need the money, that sort of thing. So if the project moves forward, you're going to need the borrowing quicker, and that would add to your debt service cost, even if you got a better rate. If projects move backward or in the scheme of things, or they are built slower for whatever reason, that would reduce your rate of debt. But I would wager that we didn't use 3.5% in the debt service calculations. But we've, as a state, I might add, that have been really successful in keeping that. We hit 4.5% at least a couple times in recent history. So I think we've had some good success in the credit markets. It's just a lot more of a mess to navigate now. But I'm just felt glad to hear that we have done so well.
The other thing, too, Mr. Gray, the bonds, even if you don't sell them all at one time, they don't cancel, I think, was it 3 or 5 years, so you got authority for some time before they cancel.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Representative Hornstein?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Gray, you had mentioned this interchange fund, and I was wondering, if any money has been spent on that, and if not, what are your plans for that? Are there some specific interchanges that you have in mind for that particular pool of money?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hornstein, I'm going to defer that question with your permission to Ms. McKenzie, other than to say I think that $10 million of the Metro interchange monies has been used and that we're still in the process of the TBD, the to be determined on the Greater Minnesota and the balance of the Metro Fund. But I'll let Abby talk to that, and I'm sure she'll address that as part of her presentation.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Gray.
Representative Holbrook.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just wondering, is that D7 legislative priority, is that the Hamilton Highway 60 earmark stuff?
Mr. Gray.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holbrook, yes, it's the Trunk Highway 60 targeted legislation, I guess.
All right, thank you.
Okay.
So there was some discussion earlier about, Mr. Chair, about the appropriations and specifically the $75 million a year. And we have allocated $69 million of that to primarily the district operations, but across the agency. We felt it prudent to hold some of that money back from an early distribution, just knowing that there were rough revenue and economic times ahead. So there's a modest pullback. And I say modest because $6 million on $1.3 billion or $1.4 billion of trunk highway fund spending is not excessive in my mind. In any event, of the amounts that have been allocated to date, $25 million went to program delivery. I think I referenced the fact that there's a significant effort to sustain and address an increased program. And as the regular program, as well as the $1.7 billion of planning efforts that are going on. And $38 million went to operations and maintenance. A vast majority of that amount, if not virtually all of it, went to the districts in the field. And this is for the snow and ice operations, pavement, guardrail, and other safety investments, and the things that keep our roads open and moving, and as well as our traffic management and other safety initiatives. And then general support, a vast majority of the general support funds are for two purposes, one being facilities maintenance investments and keeping our 1,000 buildings in functional order, as well as recognize we had to make an investment in our IT systems and baseline. So I think I covered this a little bit, but this is getting me close to the end of my piece of the presentation. The key components were of the $75 million worth of snow and ice service delivery to maintain that level, to keep even get more people behind the wheel, if you will. Significant effort to deliver the regular and Chapter 152 program. Not insignificant were increased resources towards bridge factor critical inspection efforts, improved documentation, and a higher level of investment in preventive maintenance, particularly as we get new bridges. Like anything else, if you can start out in a good path towards maintaining those bridges, you can extend the life. Pavement preventive maintenance and drainage and culverts is more and more off the road sorts of investments we need to make. And then some of the other areas of spending include safety investments, guardrail, cable median, lighting repair, striping, shoulders, and that sort of thing. So I won't spend any time on those other than say that there was a pent-up demand and that we have not only sustained our existing investments in program delivery and operations and maintenance, but been able to add some resources to it, and we think we're gonna it's going to make a difference.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Reiner.
Thank you, Chair. Sort of a slightly off-topic question, you can answer it hopefully briefly, Mr. Chair, but how much work is the department doing on alternative icing methods? You know, things that are a little bit more environmentally friendly than our traditional sand and salting routine.
I don't know if you can answer that or not, Mr. Gray.
Mr. Chair, anecdotally, I can say there's a significant focus on that. We have dedicated research efforts. We use a lot of anti-icing materials and chemicals as a constant look at the environmental side of that. Where is it impactful? How does it work? Even down to the level of what's the right mix of sand and salt, some of the basic ingredients that aren't such an alternative anymore, but are particularly effective in our climate, at least you know, when it's a normal temperature. I'm not so sure they're as effective as, you know, unfortunately, when it's 20 below Fahrenheit here. But we could get somebody to visit with you and talk briefly about that, too, that's on the maintenance engineering side. All I know is that as I tour our shops and our districts, that they've got fire facilities. We're equipping more trucks to have both the capability to have spreaders and disperse anti-icing chemicals. We've been more cognizant and have been for some time, again, my understanding of getting ahead of the curve, and anti-icing chemical treatments are very effective in that, and I think that we've got tremendous leadership in that area, but I can't talk to it much more than that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's exactly what I was looking to hear, so I don't need additional staff response.
Finally, as noted by Representative Holberg, a not insignificant part of the bill was the operating budget increases, and this is primarily to reflect that we've been close to the 4,500 person level in the agency. And there's a lot of movement between part-time and intermittent workers and emergency workers and things that are kind of on and off the rolls, particularly in the winter months where we use short-term 45-day employment contracts and the like to address peaks in snow and ice service delivery. But kind of the mainstream headcount, there's been some progress towards bringing on resources primarily in the engineering and maintenance arenas. This is just to be fully disclosed where we're at in terms of employees, and that there has been growth in the employee count, and that I guess at best you would say it's countercyclical to the pressures we're facing in the general fund and economically, but this is a direct result of a planned growth and targeted investment in maintenance and engineering functions to support higher level of service in our operating budget expenditures.
Thank you, Mr. Gray. Mr. Gray, would you just identify that for the committee, your title, so they know that if you aren't the maintenance engineer, the operations engineer, or anyone else?
And Mr. Chair, I'm the chief financial officer for MnDOT.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And at this point, Mr. Chair, I'd like to introduce Abby McKenzie, who's the director of our Office of Investment Management, and she'll walk you through the kind of the project background and timing and efforts related to the construction or the bond usage aspect of the Chapter 152.
Welcome, Ms. McKenzie. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Abby McKenzie. I'm Director of the Office of Investment Management for MnDOT. You can go to that one. I'm going to give you a brief update on the status of implementing the Chapter 152 State Roads Bond Program. As Kevin described, $1.7 billion of the bonds were provided for state road construction over the next 10 years. We presented to you an initial plan for using those funds and fulfilling the requirements of Chapter 152 last June. Since that time, one of our big accomplishments has been that MnDOT has hired John Chigwell to manage and ensure the delivery of the Chapter 152 program. John was the project manager for the I-35W bridge replacement and has a well-deserved reputation for delivering projects on time and in budget. And so, John, just raise your hand there so people can recognize you. And hopefully the next time we talk about the Chapter 152 program updates, you'll be up here talking to me. You can do the next one. To remind you, as Kevin said, one of the major requirements of the Chapter 152 legislation was mandating a bridge program that required MnDOT to repair or replace fracture-critical or structurally deficient bridges on the state highway system within the 10-year time frame of the legislation. We can go to the next one.
Ms. McKenzie, could you just, for the committee, identify real short, or less words, at what a fracture-critical bridge is?
A fracture-critical bridge is a bridge that doesn't have structural redundancy, so that a major fracture in the bridge could result in the catastrophic failure of the bridge. Doesn't mean that the bridge has any problems right now, but it's in the inherent nature of the design that it does not have redundant structure.
And redundance? Do you explain redundance?
It doesn't have a duplication of structure.
And it wouldn't all fall down at once. I guess that's the big
thing. Right. Okay, we're on the next one. So this was the bond utilization program or plan that we had presented to you last June. As you can see, $1.2 billion of the $1.7 billion of state bonds were committed to meeting the requirements of the bridge program in the law. And Kevin recovered this very quickly, but now you can see it laid out in a table form in the years that we have planned to expend those bonds. That includes $40 million for the interchanges, $50 million for transit facility improvements, and funding for Trunk Highway 60 and District 7. The remaining was committed to safety and pavement improvement projects throughout the state, and all of those projects are planned and currently underway for delivery in the fiscal year 2009 and 2010 timeframe. The interchange, the $40 million for interchanges was split in the law into two parts, $20 million for metropolitan area interchanges and $20 million for greater Minnesota interchanges. The remaining $10 million of metropolitan area interchange funding and the $20 million of greater Minnesota interchange funding, the solicitation for those projects is still under development. We've been meeting with our stakeholders, with the Department of Trade and Economic Development. But let me back up. The requirement of those that interchange funding was interchanges that would serve, number one, economic development, and then safety and congestion. And so we've been, the emphasis was on the economic development piece of that, so we've been in conversations with our partners, with legislative leaders, with the Department of Employment and Economic Development, I hope that is what I mean, to try to get a sense of the best way to solicit for those projects. We believe the solicitation will be out in the month of February for the $20 million Greater Minnesota Interchange and the remaining $10 million Metro Interchange project. So, beginning last summer, after we presented to you the plan for the Chapter 152 funding, each district, along with the Bridge Office and the Office of Investment Management, began to develop project scoping information and more fully develop project costs based on the planning level project information that we provided in the Bridge plan. In December, those preliminary scoping documents and cost estimates were finalized. Over the next 2 months, Mr. Tigelow will work with the districts to refine those scoping documents and resolve some scoping issues that have arisen out of this preliminary scoping analysis. After that is complete, OIM, the Office of Investment Management, will issue the first of the quarterly status reports on delivery of the bridge program and the other bonding projects. That is due in April of 2009. The legislation also required an annual bridge report to be submitted to you on the status of delivering those bridges in Chapter 152, and that report will be delivered to you, we hope, tomorrow. It is final, and we're just trying to get the commissioner's signature on a letter. And then finally, an annual status report will be completed in June of 2009. If you go ahead. The final requirement in the plan was to give a more comprehensive analysis of bridge investment needs and investment plans that were to be included in the statewide transportation plan. MnDOT's statewide transportation plan is being updated as we speak. The current date for completion is June 2009. The final draft of the plan should be on our website next week, and we are having public outreach meetings on that final draft in February and March. So the final plan and those requirements about the bridge investment levels required in our bridge investment plans will be in that plan. Okay, so projects underway. Three projects funded with the Chapter 152 bonds have been let. They're listed up here, the DeSoto Bridge in St. Cloud. I think you're all aware we need to close that bridge and an accelerated design and contract has that bridge now well underway. Castar 81 at 85th Avenue Interchange, which I'm sure you all are aware of as the Devil's Triangle, was wrecked last summer. And a major concrete overlay on I-90 in District 6, that's the Rochester District. And those two projects total $80 million. You can go on to the next one. So in 2009, we have 12 projects funded with the Chapter 152 bond projects that are on track for letting. The first of those projects is planned to be let this March, so just in 2 months. And these 12 projects total nearly $120 million. And you can see them. I have them here organized by transportation district. District 1 is the Duluth District. We have pavement work here and a bridge replacement. District 2, another bridge replacement and more pavement work. District 3, two more bridges to replace. District 2 is our Bemidji District. District 3 is Brainerd and St. Cloud District. You can go to the next one, Kevin. In District 6, our Rochester District, we have three more bridges being replaced and two more major pavement projects on I-35 and Interstate 90. And finally, a major concrete and lane addition on I-494 just east of town here. Yep.
Representative Beard had a question.
Oh, pardon me.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. McKenzie, on the 494 one, where are we adding the lane there? Where is that?
That's east of town where near 494 and 694. It's really not exactly a lane addition. What there are a bunch of partial auxiliary lanes. We're going to make that a continuous lane. And you're aware of that? Yes. Okay, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Yes.
Is that complete? Is that the one?
Yes, that completes my comment.
Great.
Today.
Great. Appreciate it. Are there questions for Ms. McKenzie? Representative Magnus.
Not a question, Mr. Chairman, but just and Ms. McKenzie talked about it, but John Chiglow's here, and you know, I've got a comment on the I-35 bridge, because a tremendous disaster went down, and you know, we're there visiting and working hard, and even though the temperatures today are horrifying, those folks put their bridge up in record time, and in the budget, and certainly background.
Yeah.
I said, I know MnDOT and others have been under a lot of scrutiny and criticism and everything, but you know, that bridge has made us pretty famous nationwide and in some cases worldwide. Not just the bridge going down, a tremendous tragedy, Mr. Chairman, but the effort put forth to put it back up and the work we did. And I think John deserves a round of applause from all of us. Heck of a job.
Any further questions or comments? If not, I should make an announcement. Representative Horn.
Thank you. Ms. McKenzie, I just had that question earlier about the interchanges. I wanted to know if maybe you addressed this. I don't know. I stepped out for a second.
Ms. McKenzie?
Mr. Chair, The interchanges are split $20 million for Greater Minnesota, $20 million for the metro area, the remaining $10 million in the metro area, and the remaining $20 million in Greater Minnesota. The solicitation for projects under that funding should be out in February.
Thank you, both Ms. McKenzie and Mr. Gray.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
For the members of the committee, in the packet, Ms. Ward has put this out just for your information. More about this County State 8 Highway formula if you look at it. And also, our next meeting is January 20th, which is next Tuesday. And we're going to have an airports bill and an overview from the Department of Public Safety and the Division of Vehicle Services. So if there are no further questions, we're... doing, we're starting on time and quitting early, so if you remember that, meeting's adjourned.